Welcome to Kin Folklore, where we have gone through a portal and returned to the world of His Dark Materials for the third season of the BBC HBO series based on the novels written by Philip Pullman. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andrea. In this episode, we consult our leapometer about episodes 7 and 8 of the final season of His Dark Materials. This is it, guys. We've made it to the end.
Oh, man.
We'll summarize the episodes, talk a bit about our observations, and look through the amber spyglass to discuss the nature of dust. We will also be discussing some of the differences between the original trilogy of books and the show.
And as usual, and since this is the last time we'll do the adult content warning on a His Dark Material episode, I think it's only right that we recognize a real one. So if you're ready for a woman who's so dope that she could seduce an angel, that is, until her failure of a man and failure of a father ex barges in and fucks it all up, you have come to the right place. This is Coulter. You're the best. Let's go.
All right, so let's talk about episode 7, The Clouded Mountain. The episode begins with Azrael's forces readying for war. They set up explosives in the abyss, and Serafina tells her witches that the fate of the world relies on finding Lyra and Will and their demons.
Heresy! Sorry, no, it's not really heresy.
Even Azrael, who never believed in Lyra's importance before, has to admit that the success of this entire rebellion hinges on the safety of Lyra and Will. Despite these preparations, Mrs. Coulter seems pretty unsure. Azrael shows her the weapon he intends to use, and she's pretty unimpressed with his arrogance. He tells her that he will lure Metatron into the abyss so that she can detonate the device. Lyra and Will cut their way into the Republic while the war begins, right above it. When specters are released into the world by Metatron, they wreak absolute havoc on Azrael's human forces as they did with the adults in Chittagazi. But Mrs. Coulter manages to summon the specters, and as she did in season 2, we don't really know why she has this power, but she does.
I still don't understand how she can do this. She just does this. Like, it's like it's a crazy flex that we never get to understand.
Yeah, I don't really understand it, but whatever. She does it, and she destroys all of the specters, which gets the attention of Metatron. Lyra and Will are running towards the battle, but they're found by Ogunwe first. He protects them from some cliff gas, and then Kaiza, Serafina's demon, been a long time since we really got to see Kaiza. He finds the two missing demons, Lyra Pan, obviously, and Will's demon, who's a cat. So cute, cute little cat. She explains to Pan and Will's demon that they must reunite with Lyra and Will, despite, you know, how hurt they are. And Serafina and Kaiza lead the demons in their bird forms to safety. Azrael's forces are losing the battle. They're absolutely getting their asses whooped. When Mrs. Coulter takes action, she tricks Metatron into taking her into the Clouded Mountain and leaves the golden monkey behind. Azrael follows her, and the two of them fight Metatron together with Selmaria's help. Lyra and Will arrive to Azrael's tower to reunite with their demons just as the golden monkey detonates the device in the abyss and dissolves. Really sad.
It was just Lyra's like expression and knowing what it meant. Man, really, really, really strong stuff in that episode.
I cried like a baby. I'm not gonna lie. It was really, really difficult. With the war over, Lyra and Will wander into the camp to see a cube that fell from the Clouded Mountain when it went into the abyss. Will cuts open the cube with the knife, revealing that the authority, the actual authority, not his regent, Metatron, was trapped inside of it, and he just withers away.
And that's super inside baseball, because I just thought, who's the old guy in the cube? I don't know what's going on. Like, they didn't really say. It is what it is.
It's a little confusing, for sure.
Yeah, thank God for you explaining it to me. I was like, what? What just happened here? In the next episode, Lyra and Will wake up in the world they sent the demons to, but they can't find them. They finally take a bath in
much needed bath.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we just say that Will probably is really smelly at this point? Like all the things he's gone through, including like having like deep sweats, like getting his knife put back together, traveling through worlds. It's really rough.
It's yeah. And you know, they need this. I was a little alarmed that there was no soap involved, but you will take the water. We'll take the water. It's, you know.
The water is good. So their demons are watching, and Pan is a little salty that Lyra's having fun without him. But Will's demon comforts Pan. It's really nice to see them bonding.
Mm-hmm.
Father Gomez didn't get the memo that the war was lost.
What a loser.
Okay.
You're still wandering fighting. Through worlds. Dude, Father President McPhail, dead. The authority, dead. Like, what are you doing?
Oh, man. No crisis of conscience. No questioning his reality. Just like, I'm firmly devoted to this fuckery. Let's go. Oh, man. So he crosses into the same world to where Mary is and Lyra and Will are to hunt Mary down. Figures out he's going to go find the serpent. He's going to get rid of it. That's what his whole theory is. As they look for their demons, they come across the Malefa, and Atal takes them to Mary. Mary shows them dust in the amber spyglass and tells them, yeah, dust is consciousness. That's what it is. It is thought. It's imagination. It's feeling. And she tells them that it's all leaking away. Dust is drawn to creativity, and it's also drawn to discovery. Mary tells him the story about when she realized she no longer wanted to be a nun. She, like, is in there, and the Malefa, like, kind of encouraged her to do this. Like, hey, talk to them about it and tell them the story about how you came to this realization, which is something that's going to serve them, a story that will serve them later on. With this newfound knowledge, the day they set off to find their demons again, Father Gomez spots them. And, you know, he's out here like, ah, finally, I can get Eve. And he's, like, getting ready to shoot. Coming up, ready, he's got him in the gauge, and Balthamos is not so fast. And he kills his demon. Balthamos kills Father Gomez's demon, and it's an act that kills Balthamos as well. I guess, like, he can't, like, hurt or interfere in human things, or
yeah, I'm not clear on why it killed Balthamos, aside from the interaction between two things that are entirely created by dust.
Yeah. Well, it does kill both of them. One of them we're sad about. The other one, not so much. And after dancing around it all day, Lyra finally kisses Will.
Finally.
Oh, shoot. There we go. The sparks are flying. And things start growing, making the choice that Eve made. And it draws the dust back into the world. Zephania and Seraphina sense it. The prophecy has been fulfilled. I love it. You're starting to see things grow back. Dust is coming back. Everything's looking beautiful. Seraphina appears to the demons again and names Will's demon Kajava. She explains that Will and Lyra will need them for what is to come. When Pan appears, Lyra apologizes and they reconcile. It's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Kajava introduces herself to Will for the first time. He sees his demon. Zephania appears and tells Lyra and Will that every window in every world has to be closed. There are many windows opened by previous bearers. She tells them that if humanity commits to it, they can create enough dust for a single opening. They decide on the land of the dead being the opening that needs to remain. The opening they made in the land of the dead will remain. Will must break the knife when he returns home, and the angels can close the rest of the windows. It's a very, very heartbreaking news where they just can't come to terms with the fact that they won't be able to be together in the same world. It's tough for me to watch.
It's awful. And it's awful. Yeah. We will unpack it for sure.
We
because
definitely
it's,
will.
It's a really sad story in the end.
Yeah. At Lyra's Oxford, Lyra and Will sit on a bench, the same bench they sat on at Will's Oxford in season 2. And agree to come to the bench every year for an hour in their separate worlds to be together. They say their goodbyes, and Will and Mary go to their world. Will breaks the knife by thinking of Lyra. Lyra returns to Jordan and Will to his mother. Life goes on for both of them, but a year later, they return to the bench to think of each other.
And I collapsed into heaving sobs. Like, yeah, I was a mess.
Yeah, it's like, man, I yelled out at the end of this scene is, why did you put me through this?
Yeah.
Like, why did we go all this distance just for them not to even get to be together? They save the world and they lose the person that's the most precious to them. And especially, I mean, for both of them, but just thinking about Lyra, like, she's lost her mother, her father, Lee Scoresby. Like, she feels pretty, like, and now Will. It's just, like, it's rough. Granted, she has, like, some other people, but it's still rough.
Not enough. Not enough. Like,
yeah.
We'll talk more. We should talk about the many losses that we've incurred in this episode. But, like, I'm just glad Serafina was there for her in the end, because she really needed that.
So, I just want to go on record as the same, that from the very, very, very beginning, I was out on this guy. And I basically was like, listen, don't even pour anything out for anything that he's associated with, the decanter, everything. I really wish that the headmaster would have succeeded in his plot. So we're not going to break with tradition. Adriel does not get a drop.
Not a drop.
Anything that we are going to pour out.
Not a drop.
Nor does Father Gomez and his spider. Nor does Metatron.
Nope. In fact, I feel like all three of them owe us some liquor. Like, they need to give us something.
100%. The Abyss couldn't have found a better companion. It's almost too good. Like, even the Abyss is too good for this fuckboy. It's really bad. But what we will be doing is pouring one out for Stel Maria, his demon.
Mm-hmm.
Because she ain't do nothing.
She was a ride or die. It's not her fault that her human was garbage.
Garbage. The many rebels who lost their lives in the battle.
Mm-hmm.
Balthamos.
Yes. Another real one.
Another real one. And last, but certainly not least, the person who has one of the best redemption arcs outside of Zuko. Mrs. Coulter and her demon, the Golden Monkey.
This goes out to all our fallen homies, yo.
Pull out a little liquor. Don't let the gin get like that, y'all.
So sad to see those two go.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting to feel this way, but
no.
It was really hard to see those two go.
I mean, you go from hating Mrs. Coulter and being really upset, like, in her being a person who's, like, abandoned her child, like literally, like, killed children and abducted them, to really feeling like, wow, what a change of direction for her to sacrifice herself and you know, for the sake of Lyra and the world. It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
Pretty good stuff. So let's talk about What happened in this episode? I mean, we should start with our main players here. Let's actually stick with Mrs. Coulter first, and we'll come back to Will and Lyra. But let's talk about Mrs. Coulter. Stay here. You know, Mrs. Coulter and Stefania speak, and Stefania tells her that her love for Lyra is the salvation and also her downfall. And she kind of intimates that she knows what's going to happen, that she and lets her know that she has extraordinary powers to suppress the best part of herself, and she'll need to use it, which is kind of like a precursor to what Culty is going to have to do in sacrificing herself and having to deal with Metatron. And this is clearly an ability that she has to utilize. What did you think of this whole plot point?
I loved it. It's like a lot of people are going to have a problem with us comparing her to Zuko, but since we already have, I just want to loop back to how uniquely qualified she is to go up against Metatron because of the type of person she was before. Just like Zuko was uniquely qualified to help Aang prepare to take down Ozai.
The Fire Lord.
Mm-hmm. And somewhat Azula, but mostly Ozai. And that experience that Mrs. Coulter had of confronting her darkness. Never, in the end, even though she's a character who can suppress her emotions, because she had gone through all of this experience and because she had experienced losing her daughter, she was now a person who had confronted that darkness, who knew that darkness and who she was intimately. This mm-hmm. conversation with Zephania is where she makes her decision because, I mean, Zephania says she made the decision before this, but like, to me, this solidifies it. She is the only person at that camp who's qualified to bait Metatron because she is the only person who can authentically show her darkness to him and use it to manipulate him, but is also the only person who could have that kind of transparency so that she seems authentic and still hide something away.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's a strong point. It's also a recognition by Zephania. Like it's Zephania has known the whole time that Asriel wasn't going to be able to do what he's doing. Like when he's saying he's going to be able to do, like when she's saying what's going to be needed, she knows that like, that's not the description that like literally Asriel does not fit the job description.
Yeah. You know what I mean? He's like super hyped in his idea.
Yeah.
He's buying into his own hype per usual. He's also extremely salty that his daughter is more important than he is. But like,
well, what do you mean? He was born to change the world. he was born to do it, wasn't he? He wasn't.
My eyes rolled into the back of my head.
Oh,
but
God.
All the dunking on Asriel aside, none of this would have happened if Asriel hadn't pulled all the rebels together. So he served a purpose. He's just awful, but he definitely despite what Lyra did, defeating Metatron, none of it would have happened without Asriel pulling all of these different people together to say we can fight back.
It doesn't matter because everybody's special. So why do we think that he's special?
Well,
everyone's special.
Let's talk a little bit about his speech, right? Because like this was a part of the episode that I was like hyped up but also angry at myself because I actually loved his speech.
His speech is great.
It was beautiful.
Speech is great.
Our lives are beautiful and precious. We should be allowed to experience all they have to offer without the fear of retribution.
Quick beat change. He goes from all of that to this. Go ahead. Continue.
Some of you will die.
It's rough. That's rough. Okay, I'm not gonna stop, but that's really fucking rough to go from here's this inspiration.
Some of you our lives are important, but some of you will die.
Exactly. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist.
but thanks to my daughter, we no longer need to fear that fate. From today, death is no longer an ending, but a journey back into life.
Yeah.
But not for him, right? And not for Mrs. Coulter, which is what makes their sacrifice so much more meaningful because their souls are just going to be tumbling through this abyss for eternity.
Yeah. I mean, it's true that he has damned himself to this same thing that it's kind of like, you know, to being in the abyss for eternity. I don't know, man. I love the speech. I would have loved this speech coming from anyone, right? I question it coming from him only because now all of a sudden it's thanks to my daughter. So now he can't even like, you know, she's been unimportant. She can't be that important. And so there's like a mixed emotion that I have from him just as a character. The speech is amazing, but the mixed emotion that I have from him as a character is that it wasn't okay to support her until he realized, oh, well, she's that important. It's going to be my daughter. So it's like, oh, are you saying this because you really believe that this is the outcome that needs to happen? Or is it like you still trying to like make yourself more important? I don't know. And
no,
then part
I,
of me
I think he's genuine here. And here's why. At the beginning of the episode, when the war council is together, he admits, yeah. I have my entire life resisted the notion of prophecy. I think prophecy is full of it. I don't believe in any of this. But now I find myself realizing that Lyra is the most important person in the world and that we have to do everything we can to help her. And this, he goes into this battle knowing they will probably lose, that their whole purpose is to buy Lyra time to get back to Pan. That's what this is all about, for to buy time to get Will and Lyra reunited with their demons so that Lyra can fulfill the prophecy. I think he's genuine, but I hear you. This is a tough pill to swallow. And also, Mrs. Coulter, when she went to speak to Metatron, going back to her for a second, in the book, I wasn't sure if she was going to sacrifice herself. These two characters have been so manipulative and so single-minded that you're not clear on what they're going to do. I mean, Metatron offers to make Mrs. Coulter an angel, and I was like, damn, is she going to take... I mean, that's a hard offer to take, to say no. And like, if she becomes an angel, does she somehow believe that that will help her protect Lyra? Like, so I understand why you don't, you're saying maybe this speech from Azrael is not authentic. I think it is, but like, I don't, you're not wrong.
I mean, he don't believe in his own damn self. Even Stone Maria is all like, so their advantage to not being the chosen one. Like dunking right on yourself. No, I'm with you. I understand what you're saying. I mean, you know, when I first read the book, the first book, The Golden Compass, and we were talking about stuff, I called you after the end of the book, reading it, and I was like, I don't like any of these people.
Yeah, you were out especially on the heels of like, you were
out the whole family, like Roger dying. And I think two of them redeemed themselves. Like when Roger died, I was like, oh yeah, I'm out on this whole family. Like I'm good. I do think that Lyra and Mrs. Coulter, like, you know, they do have redemption arcs. And I think I get it. Like people being like, oh, well, why would you compare Mrs. Coulter to Zuko and all that? Only because Zuko is, to me, the gold standard of redemption arcs. Like I've read a lot of stories and there's very few people who have ever had a redemption arc that great.
I mean, the only character I can think of in comparison is Severus Snape.
Yeah, 100%. That's like the only other person. I'm with you 100% on that.
A lot of people would argue he didn't need a redemption arc because he was always a triple agent. But like, from the audience's point of view, I think that that's the only other character who comes close. And I still think Zuko's redemption arc is better.
Yeah. So like that being said, to see the journey that Lyra, who's like a lion, kind of precocious, like really, really selfish, kind of like the world revolves around me, but I feel bitter because my dad or my uncle at the time doesn't really like, you know, show me any attention, to go to, I'm going to go to literally a place of death and let go a piece of myself to save not only my best friend, but the rest of humanity, and open a portal that will allow for what seems like reincarnation, is what's being suggested or hinted. It's like a long distance for a character, just as Mrs. Coulter, from being a person who murders children to being able to sacrifice herself to save the world. These are long distances for these people. I don't think that Azrael does the same level of work.
I agree. I think Azrael doesn't change that much. His opinion of what's important pivots at the end, but who he is, that arrogance, that I'm the one, I'm the one who can lure and then literally take on an angel physically. And Metatron was whooping that ass.
Oh man.
Like this is why Mrs. Coulter was like, yeah, this plan is not gonna work.
Yeah, and she was actually doing fine until she had to like also deal with Azrael shit. She was like, I think I'm gonna get this done. Like, this is gonna be cool. And then all of a sudden she's like, oh shit, Azrael's actually here? Fuck this guy again. You know what I mean? Like, so anyway, it's really, really interesting, this whole situation that we find ourselves in. With the clouded mountain. I mean, they both have to face themselves, like these two characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really, really interesting to see Mrs. Coulter confronted her darkness. And she's like, you know, not distracted. It doesn't seem like, anyway, that she's distracted by Metatron's offer, which is like, you know, like you said, it's an attractive offer. You're going to be an angel. You know what I mean? Like, previous Mrs. Coulter may have taken that right away.
The previous Mrs. Coulter, this would have been the highest honor.
Yeah.
You know, this is a woman who dedicated her life, her research, everything she did. The reason that she killed those children was to serve the authority. And this would have been something that she would have been so honored to have even been received the offer. Of course she would have taken it, but this Mrs. Coulter does what she believes is in the best interest of Lyra, and, you know, by default Will, because they're together. And by the way, I don't feel like Will got enough credit for the role that he played amongst the rebels and the War Council. Maybe they didn't realize how significant at the time the knife was, but Will stayed pure-hearted with this knife that could do so much to the very end. I got to be honest with you. I wouldn't have broken that knife.
I would not have broken the knife. I'm going to never see Lyra again, knowing that she existed in another world, I definitely would not have broken the knife.
Yeah, I would have been like, how about this? Why don't you tell me where all of the windows are and I'll close them.
Yep. And that would give me more time.
Yep.
That's exactly what I would have done too.
So, but he's like this pure-hearted young man who wants to do the best always. And it's sort of him who comes to the conclusion that they won't, you know, they really won't be able to stay together. Because I think Lyra's instinct is to resist. And I can understand that, because this is a girl who's essentially done the impossible time and time again. But these are good kids and good people. Yeah. And the character work that the show has done is extremely well earned.
Yeah,
this is Mrs. Coulter's death, the way that she goes out of the world, the decision that she makes is totally believable because of the work they put into this character, which was work that some of which they didn't have a blueprint for. Mrs. Coulter got to do a lot of things in the show that she doesn't do in the books. She really is kind of like a mustache twirling type of villain in at least in the first two books. And they really built out her character to make her a fully formed person with whose motivations we can better understand in the show. So bravo to them. I mean, we didn't even talk about how we liked these episodes because we just jumped right in. I found this astounding.
Yeah.
This wasn't, and yes, there are problems, right? Like the fact that they didn't tell anyone who the authority was. Big problem.
Yeah.
That's like the biggest one. Everything else, they really clean up. Like the battle in the book is complete chaos. You can barely follow it. There's many, many more named characters involved in the battle. This battle was not only like well designed and a beautiful spectacle to watch on TV, but they had the scene where they set up what the expectation would be. Asriel literally says, here is the plan. So when all these other things happen, you understand what's happening. In the book, it just felt like, I couldn't even explain it to you. Like, there are ghost fighting in the battle. It's the Gallivespians are still involved. Like, it's just a lot. It's really confusing.
Yeah, I remember you telling me immediately, like, oh my God, this battle is so much more, like, cohesive than what was in the book. And it felt clear, like, what was happening on the screen.
Yeah, you know what I mean? The only thing that wasn't clear to me immediately was whether or not Ogunwe survived the battle. But, you know, we see him at the end, so we know that he did. Yeah. But yeah, I just have to say HBO, BBC, tremendous job on finishing a story that the final book is a little bit confusing and it's pretty chaotic. So I think they did a great job here in laying out both the stakes and also doing the character work that really these deaths, these sacrifices are so meaningful.
Yeah, I mean, and to them as well, for like, let's just, you know, tiny bit of meta is like, let's be honest, this has been a way more popular show overseas in the UK than it has been here for numerous reasons. Their promotion, the COVID hiatus, all the other things, the commitment to the effects work, the storytelling, the acting, just everything to finish this with a level of integrity. We said it earlier, but I gotta say, like, that to me is like, this is like a commitment to excellence. Like, I'm gonna finish. We're gonna finish. And they even hint a little bit at, hey, maybe there'll be something that comes after this in some form later on, mm-hmm. which is like really kind of profound. Like, I think that they did a fine job of running through the tape. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I would not be surprised if we saw a couple of movies or another like limited series based on the other works from this world. But I like I said, I think in the first episode we recorded on the show for this season, they went for it.
Yeah.
And they nailed much of it. Not perfect season, but like they nailed a lot of it.
And I think it's fascinating, like kind of talking about, you know, the battle and the war. I mean, Metatron uses everything that he's got. Mind control, specters, cliff gas, angels. He's just going. And shouts to Mrs. Coulter and the Golden Monkey and how strong this scene was. That happens because without them, they don't win this war. And I think that it's really that scene and the look on Lyra's face when the Golden Monkey pulls the lever and then disappears. Man, I was emotional when I saw it. It was really, 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 it was like, wow, this is again, a shout out to what you just were talking about, the character work, like where the Golden Monkey used to spy on Lyra and there was like a real kind of like weird, like kind of distrust. And for her to like kind of realize, oh my God, the Golden Monkey, where's my mom? And knowing what this means when the demon disappears and how strong that is. And
it was
tough.
Yeah, it's really hard. The reaching for the Golden Monkey, they've told us so many times, including in the previous two episodes, what it means to touch another person's demon, right? Mm-hmm. The reaching out to him, which would have been a connection I don't think Lyra's ever had before. The Golden Monkey and Pan have mm-hmm. interacted, but never Lyra and the Golden Monkey. And to not be able to do that, but the fact that they were reaching out to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Coulter's last act in this world wasn't to just sacrifice herself for her daughter, but was in the only way that she still could, was to reach out to her daughter.
Yeah,
I was a mess, like a complete mess, because so much of this book is a coming of age story and it's about what it means to be an adult. And one thing that we all know is that no matter how we feel about our parents, no matter who our parents are, there is still usually a longing for them, a longing for that connection, which Lyra kind of tries to unpack.
Yeah.
You know, in the finale with Will, is like, I should feel relieved. I don't feel that. And another thing that I really liked about the show that I don't recall this happening in the book is Ogunwe tells Lyra that Azriel is proud of her.
Yeah.
Lyra doesn't need that to be a fully formed person or to move on with her life, but she needs that emotionally to know this person who was always dismissive of her, who to the last minutes of his life seems to mm-hmm. think he's the most important person in the world, was proud of her and told all the rebels.
Yeah.
That Lyra Silverton, Lyra Belacqua, whatever they know her name to be, is the one who is going to save us all. That is super important because she's been mostly doing stuff quietly, right? Not everyone's aware of the significance of what Lyra has accomplished in what's basically a year of her life.
Yeah, it's significant, and it's really like helps her, I think, to not to not, like she says, hate Azrael anymore.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, like you said, she feels she's like, you know, made some peace with like her mom, but she also feels alone, you mm-hmm. know, in some ways, like, which, so I guess hearing that is like super, will help her some, because she feels alone, and Will tells her that she's not, you know, that he'll be there with her.
Which broke my heart, but, because I knew what was coming.
You knew what was coming. Like, he's like, yeah, I'm here with you. And it echoes like what, you know, what Lyra says to him, like earlier. She says, you know, Will offers to go get the demons without Lyra so she can go be in the world where they open the door in the land of the dead. And she refuses and lets him know because they're in it together. She says, you still don't get it. Like, do you, after all this time, we're in it together, which was like so beautiful. And so it was like really touching. And Will notes that, you know, based on their experiences, that no one will ever understand what they've been through except for each other. Like, they really understand each other on a deep level because of how far they've had to travel, which really makes the post-war stuff like even more difficult, starting with like Pan and Lyra and them them coming back together and he learning that she's gone through puberty. He's settled as a pine marten.
Yeah.
Here it is. Like, yeah. It's here.
The last time we saw Pan change was the bird, right? So that's mm-hmm. it. He's going to be a pine marten for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Which I'm cool if he's super cute still.
Like, yeah, he's super 100%. Adorable.
Yeah. I have to apologize to the audience because my own little demon has been meowing in the background. I don't know what her problem is. I don't know if the mic is picking it up, but I don't know. She's probably like, why are you talking with these other animals? The whole thing with Lyra and Will is so devastating. And before we go more into that and their separation, and I have a lot of feelings from like, not a meta commentary about the show, but about the book. I do want to just talk about one of the major changes from the book that really like hurts in this episode where Lyra and Will separate. It's that Lyra is alone, except for Serafina. Yeah. And we know that Lyra has always been somewhat alone, but she had Roger. And then she had Lee, who is gone. Yurik is in the north. She's returning to Jordan for what? Like, it's not clear what she's supposed to do. Obviously, in the final scene, we see that she's clearly a student there, and she's sort of moved on with her life and is studying. And the end does tell us that she did learn to read the alethiometer again.
Yeah, because it was taken from her. It was given to her by grace, they say.
Yeah.
And now she'll have to work for it, which was like, man, so you were only given this like...
To fulfill your mission. It was a tool to fulfill your mission. And now that you fulfilled it, you no longer have this grace. But it hurts my heart so much that what was missing from this finale was the Egyptians, who in the book, she's reunited with Ma Costa and Father Coram, and like that was her family. There's even a point in the story earlier in the story where she's like, I could just stay with them.
Yeah.
And so, yes, Lyra does go back to Jordan. And when she gets back to Jordan, she's welcomed by the headmaster and she meets a new professor. And it's the story sort of shakes out the same way. But I would have just loved for Lyra to have that one last connection to her original family, which was the Egyptians.
Like others have had, right? Like she, you know, Will gets reunited with his mom.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like there's like Mary and him both go through the portal, right? So, you know, there's a lot there. Like Ogunwe, like, is reunited with his daughters, and his older daughter seems to have, you know, been rehabilitated. You know, it's not like under the spell of the authority. So there's like other people are having these endings, and to her, I feel like she sacrificed the most, and she doesn't seem to be given, like you said, that closing kind of like, oh, here she is reunited with Ma Costa and the Egyptians, or anything. And that's rough, you know, because I think like it would have helped that to feel so permanent. And I know I've read ahead a little bit, and I don't want to spoil anything, but there's things that this like kind of reads into on like her relationship to herself that's really difficult for her to wrap her mind around as the story goes on in these next kind of like installments from what I've read in summaries and takes and blah, blah, blah. So
Lyra's not okay at the end of this story. And I think I think the show tried to make it as upbeat as possible. Like, you know, she's a student. She's not there. She's not in a dark room crying herself to sleep or anything. She's obviously, you know, gone through the motions of life. She's learning. But emotionally, Lyra is not okay at the end of the book. And that decision not to bring back the Egyptians, and I totally understand it from like a production standpoint, is rough when you realize she's returning to so little and Will is returning at least back to his mom.
Yeah, but let's really unpack this for a second. Let's just say, for example, from a meta standpoint, you're talking about production. You can't bring all the Egyptians back. Okay, I get that. That's fine. I'm with that. What would it have hurt to get one of the main characters? Just one. Ma Costa, Fa Decorum. I mean, Fa Decorum may have been a little harder. Any of them, John Fa, like any of them.
I would have loved to just have John Fa.
Yeah.
With Serafina or Ma Costa with Serafina.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because it would have been like at least Lyra's ending this story in the care of the two mother figures that she's known despite having lost her actual mother. Mm-hmm. Like, that would have been nice. Or Serafina and John Fa, you know, father and mother figures. You know, like that would have been something that I think would have made at least me as a grown woman feel a little bit better. I feel like this is a really devastating story for like a, you know, young teenager to read. Cause it's like, yes, these kids were capable of anything, but then they gave up everything. And last episode, Serafina just told us that all that Eve did was dare to experience. It really does feel like Lyra's being punished for taking that leap.
Exactly. 100%. That's where it feels like really, really, really like tough to like make out what they're trying to say with this and why she has to suffer in this way. And it really makes me think about, and you know, we'll talk about some of the stories because we're getting close to like, you know, going through the Amber Spyglass and some of the other things. But I want to talk about Mary's story for a second because I think like it's kind of like similar in the sense that they were trying to prepare us for something, but also prepare Lyra and Will for something. And it kind of just, you know, she met someone at a conference. It was a woman who she was connected to on an emotional level, who she wanted to be close to while she was a nun. The story is the same in the book, except in the book, Mary met a man who made her feel alive. But it's the same general feeling right here. And would anyone be better off, she says, if I just go back to the hotel and say my prayers and promise never to fall into temptation again? And the answer came back no, that she understood that this wasn't going to change the world, her doing this. And it felt liberating. She wanted to experience everything the world had to offer and wanted to experience love. And in that moment, Will and Lyra are realizing that they're falling in love with each other. And it's a really, really, really cool story. And I think it has a lot of correlation too. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on this as to what, like, Balthamo says when he sees Gomez and he says, desire is not sin. Love takes a million forms, each of them beautiful and each of them worthy. It's really cool. I mean, I think
was
it's like
so moved by that.
Yeah.
Balthamos is like kind of annoying character in the book. You do really feel from him because obviously he had been with Baruch for like, I think a couple thousand years. And he obviously has a really horrible reaction to Baruch's death. In addition to that, he's like, okay, can we just go to Azrael? Because that's what this is about. And Will is insisting on doing all this other stuff. Yeah. This Balthamos is a vast improvement, in my opinion, And what he says to Gomez is kind of, this is why this show got made, you know, like,
yeah,
making the choice to do something that is radical in many countries. This show will never be viewable for people because the notion of having two angels who are queer, having them kiss each other, then having one of them validate all kinds of love, every kind of love. Like, this is why I think HBO agreed to make this story. This story is like takes a lot of leaps in its discussion of religion, but it has a lot of other messages as well.
I agree. And I think Mary's story fits in that really well too.
Oh yes. I love the way Mary played the serpent. It was pure and innocent. Even Mary can't understand why her, and like, she's like, I didn't do anything.
I
literally just told them a story. But that simple act of giving them the permission to feel what they were feeling and to not make them feel bad about the way that they were feeling for each other, or that like, that it is like a temptation or that it's sinful or wrong, gave them the permission to just love each other purely and change the world. And so Mary's story got me. What the show did miss, and this is just time. While Mary's with the Mulefa, this is the happiest time in her life. She's really comfortable with her, and Atal have like a relationship that is deeply moving. Atal is the Mulefa who spends the most time with her. She basically explained, I mean, the show showed us that, but Mary is learning freely without having to worry about all these things that she had to worry about as a professor. There's no grants to apply for. There's no, you know, worrying about what other people are going to think about you. She's just there learning about these people, learning their culture. And so when she tells this story about how she made another transition in her life from being a nun, it's really impactful because Mary is a character who we've been watching really grow in the way that she loves to grow the most, which is intellectually. And so I just thought that the very notion that just sharing this story, which is so innocent and is just a response to a question that I think Will asked about how she gave up being a nun, allowed these young people to just stop being scared of a feeling that they were already having. That part of the coming of age story is really beautiful. And if we recall, neither of them have really seen love up close before, right? Will's mom, I'm sure, never had this conversation with him. His father died when he, well, didn't die, but he thought his father died when he was quite young. And Lyra never had parents at all, really. And so Mary is probably the first adult who's telling, like, acknowledging to them, like, this is what it feels like when you are attracted to someone.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. It leads them down that road. And even when they're separating, it's such a beautiful thing and promise that they make to, you know, each other, that to agree to live their lives and then to come back together when they go through the land of the dead and then tell Gracious Wings their stories. I mean, man,
again,
to think that
like,
they're like
openly sobbing at that point, sobbing when Lyra said, brought up Gracious Wings and finding each other in the afterlife. Like, I was a complete mess by then.
Yeah, it was a lot. I guess a good place, because we started and the whole series opens this way, is to kind of talk about the prophecy and what Serafina says. So, and then we'll talk about dust and the amber spyglass. But it says, Serafina says, the prophecy has been fulfilled. The love of Eve shall heal the earth, and all the world shall feel it. Nature will be restored. Hope will spark in darkness. All innocence turns to experience, and all will be in harmony once more. Pretty interesting from where we started the whole thing of us speaking about the prophecy of a girl and what would happen of and so that's good stuff, man. It's emotional. It's hard to say goodbye to this. This is the show that we started the podcast with. So this will be the last time we take a little time and go through the Amber Spyglass.
So we finally got the answer that we have been seeking this entire time. And I think Lyra and Will finally get it too. What is dust? Dust is, goes by a lot of different names in this story, but most importantly, in Lyra's world, it's considered to be sin. Dust is consciousness. It is what allows sentient beings to experience, to learn, to grow, to be creative. In his Dark Materials, Philip Pullman looks at the story of Eve's original sin differently. Eve's temptation was not about being lured into evil, but was instead about embracing the potential of the human experience. Adults attract more dust because of their experience and their ability to make complex decisions. As a young person starts to become more curious about the world, more dust will be attracted to them. Dust has been escaping the world, and I think this is like not fully fleshed out in the story as well. But the reason that it's been escaping the world is because the previous knife bearers from Chitakazi have been leaving windows open, and dust goes through those windows every time you open one and don't close it. Just like Azrael's portal created havoc in the north and on the rest of the environment, these windows create a darkness that consumed the dust. So closing those portals will allow the dust to stop leaking out. But now that there's no more authority and no more influence of organized religion in the world, they will be able to be more creative. Now that death has been defeated, people don't have to worry about embracing life. Going back to what Azrael said, life is precious, and he wants to make it a paradise on earth, not worrying about the paradise when you die.
Yeah, I think it's, and I think like it's powerful to like have conquered death as well in the story because of what it, you know, and the, all the religious points he's making, that that's one of the things that are presented in the religious texts again about death, the knowledge brought about the knowledge of death, you know, life and death. So it's interesting. It's an interesting take. I mean, what do you what do you feel about the story before we close and everything and the theme? And the theme of the story in general, and then also your overall feelings about the story, you know?
That's a great question. I'm really conflicted about this story. I love the central idea that life is precious and that people should feel that they should be allowed to experience life for better or worse, that people should be allowed to make mistakes, make bad decisions, but that the consequence for that is not that you'll spend the rest of your existence in eternal damnation. I do have some like questions about some of the other themes in the story. But I like much of how it's laid out. I thoroughly enjoy just like how well equipped Mary and Mrs. Coulter are to play their roles in Lyra and Will's journey. I love the character growth on for everyone. Not everyone, but for the central primary characters. Mm-hmm. But there's just so much to unpack about this story. Every time I feel like I know what my thoughts and feelings are about the story overall, some other thing pops up and I feel differently about it. And I think that's good art, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have dunked on the Amber Spyglass, the book, many times, because I do think that the author lost control of the narrative in various parts of the book. He tried to like overstuff it. That said, good art is art that when you walk away from it, you continue to think about it. And that's how I feel about this His Dark Materials trilogy. This is so much more than a story about a little girl who meets witches and armored bears. And like, this is not just your traditional fantasy. There's a lot of really heavy-handed themes in this story about the nature of humanity, the nature of religion, the nature of creativity, scientific. The show doesn't even get into the scientific stuff. Like, there's mm-hmm. so much in here about, you know, what is heresy and what is scientific exploration. And that just, so all of that complexity to say, I love this story. And one of the reasons I love it is because it keeps giving. I keep thinking about it in different ways.
Yeah, I think I share some of those sentiments. I think that for me, what I think about in the story is that he approached some pretty big ideas, you know, from a religious standpoint, from just like a, you know, practical like life standpoint. I think, you know, like there's some things that I think are huge ideas. I think in some ways he's still working through, and he took it mm-hmm. from a lot of different vantage points that, like, you know, that like all of us, he's still trying to come to some of his own conclusions. So he could present the conclusions that he came to up to this point. Some of them probably don't feel as fleshed out. Some of them feel chaotic. And I think that that's probably because it's natural and honest to where he is as he's working through his own process. And each person, I think, why it stays alive with us when we leave the work is because we're all still working through similar processes to kind of figure out our relationship to these ideas and these things, which is, I don't know, I think, like you said, it's good art. It's really interesting to do that. I think from like a person who studies a lot about, I don't know, religion, sometimes in my, you know, philosophy, these other things, I think there's some interesting places that he approached that really stand out to me, like this idea of an afterlife and reincarnation and why people would be afraid of death. I think like that's really interesting in the sense that there's definitely documented historical accounts of reincarnation being removed from certain texts. Like we know this, like there's certain like things in history you can read about, right? And so for me, like, it's really interesting that he's talking about from my vantage point, not being people who don't feel like they can fully live or fully experience because of kind of like decided upon criteria by organizations and organizational structures and societal structures that don't allow people to fully experience what it means to be human. And that is the central theme I walk away from it thinking about. And, you know, I think like to me, like there's a lot to be learned there and a lot to be thought about there and a lot to, like, again, perspective that he played with there that I find fascinating. And that's why I think it was a good story for us to start with it. I mean, if you think about the through line of all of these stories that we've talked about, there's a lot of themes that are really run through similarly. Like they run, like, you know, from this show, you could think about, I mean, I can think about some of the things we talked about even in Lovecraft Country around oppression and religion and society and war and being able to fully be yourself in a society that doesn't accept you when you think about certain characters in that story. And these things all are very connected. So I think it's a hard story to say goodbye to because it is something, they're topics that you want to keep exploring. And I think that the good news is we'll probably explore them a lot more in a lot of other stories that we cover.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think of Lovecraft Country often when I think of Mrs. Coulter's story.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of similarities between what the central thesis of that work was around the experiences of Black women and some of what Mrs. Coulter experienced as a woman in this world that was oppressive. And so I think that this story, one, definitely influenced fantasy for children and young mm-hmm. people. It continues to influence them. But it also kind of showed that you can talk to young audiences about these big themes.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there are definitely parts in the story that are heavy-handed, but you can engage in these conversations about the metaphysical with young people as long as you give them something to relate to. And so when I think about the overall theme of this story, it really comes down to, like, all of this was done out of love.
Mm-hmm.
Lyra goes on this journey initially because of her love for her friend Roger. Mrs. Coulter sacrifices herself because of her love for her daughter. All of this is about how people can't fight for each other when they experience love. So I may feel differently in a few days, but like, or even a few weeks or months or years, but the way that I think about this story now is it's an achievement. You know, I never really, when I first read the Golden Compass, I was like, oh, this is a cute story with talking animals.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of my impression. I never expected to be thinking as deeply about like what, like basically the meaning of life and of mm-hmm. experience from this story. I just never thought it would take me there. I always considered this to be a children's story that was about how religion is bad.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more than that. And I think that the show did a good job of making it enough about other things that even if you don't rock with the religious message, there's still something in here for you. This is still a coming of age story. This is still an adventure. There's just a lot that is relatable and not necessarily, you know, against certain, you know, religious beliefs. I think you can totally take what you get from this story and leave the stuff that you don't agree with.
100%. I agree. Well, I'm happy that we started our podcast with this show. I'm happy that we finished out the coverage of this show. Who knows if they'll come back with, you know, movie content that we'll do a one-off on or whatever it is. But for now, you know, all you His Dark Material fans, check out all of our content, the other content, you know, that we release. If there's other shows that we cover still, you know, we love having you all along. And I'm sure there will be tons of references to this story. As you can tell, we talk about other shows on these shows, like, I don't know, Game of Thrones comes up a million times. So we just appreciate you. I've appreciated covering this with you, cuz it was great. It was the first thing you texted me. It was like, let's start a podcast and let's talk about this show. So it will always have a special place.
Yeah, definitely. This has been a really fun journey, and I'm glad we could see this one to the end, because it hasn't always been. You know, there are certain stories that fandoms that we're already like deeply entrenched in, and mm-hmm. there have been multiple times where we've been like, whoa, what if it's in conflict with His Dark Material? What do we do? I'm glad that we had this space in our schedules to make sure that we could close out this final season with this show that has meant so much to us, and also was like a great show to cover, because it's both, it has its comedic moments, you know, like Father Gomez not getting the memo about the fact that the war is over, but it also has really moving parts, like a second later, Balthamos making a decision to sacrifice himself to save Lyra and Will. Like, this show kind of gave us a good footing on like what kind of podcast we wanted to be. So 100%. I'm glad we got to do this together.
Definitely. And this will conclude our coverage. We'll announce what we're going to cover next, but please stay in touch with us at all of our socials, Kin Folklore Pod on Instagram, Kin Folklore Pod on Twitter. Stay tuned for announcements of the next show and next season. And you can reach out to us at kinfolklore@gmail.com. We hope you have had a wonderful holiday season and that you're going into the new year. And we will see you next time.
Bye, everyone.